Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we welcome back a guest who is the president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy. Their website is theird.org. And sometimes I just scratch my head and I wonder how liberal can liberal so-called Christian denominations get. And there's a story out of Sweden, which I know they're pretty liberal, but this liberal is kind of surprising. We're going to talk about it right now with Mark Tooley. Mark, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be with you, Jerry.
All right. I know you're a busy guy, so I'll get right to it. The Bishop of Stockholm, who I guess is a lesbian woman, obviously, and she proposed that churches remove crucifixes and also that they install prayer space for Muslims in these Christian churches. Your comments?
Yes, disturbing, obviously, but not very shocking, as you know, given the trajectory of old-line Protestantism, especially by the state churches of Northern Europe, which have been in steady decline for 50, 60 years and more theologically and socially liberal. Some of them have been disestablished, which I believe is now true for the Swedish church. Others remain state churches, but their attendance levels are very, very small, and that trend will, of course, continue as they become more and more estranged from traditional church teachings.
As a matter of fact, there's an article in Breitbart which says that the Sweden church might lose as many as a million members. And maybe, you know, to American ears, that might not sound like too much, but my wife is from Norway. Norway is neighbors to Sweden. They only have about 5 million in 5 million of people in Norway, but Sweden has more. But still, can you imagine if you had a population of 5 million? Oh, and about a million of them left church within a short few years. That would be astounding.
Yes, I believe the whole population of Sweden is only 7 or 8 or 9 million, and.
Wow.
So, yes, a million church members, a loss of that number would be huge for the Church of Sweden. And I believe their average church attendance is less than 5% of the nation. So it's a very secular country. And if anything, the Church of Sweden has facilitated and enabled that secularization.
Hmm. And one of the things, too, as far as Europe is concerned, there's this a situation, obviously, where some of the Muslims coming in, welcoming them as refugees and so forth, there are obviously some conflicts and even reports of allegations of rape and so forth from the Muslims.
Yes, by some accounts, there have been crime waves in some of the European countries that have accepted large numbers of overwhelmingly young male Muslim migrants. And Sweden, by some accounts, has been among the hardest hit, a nation with the traditionally very low crime rates, especially low rates of violent crime. And yet there have been reportedly there has been an upsurge in rapes and other violent crime in Sweden generated by this influx of young male migrants.
A part of what the bishop is trying to do here, this openly lesbian bishop, is saying we want to make the church a more welcoming place for Muslim guests whom she called angels. Well, I can understand the idea of, kind of outreach to Muslims, but it sounds like in trying to remove the cross and the crucifixes and so forth, it's sort of like, well, you're welcome to come here, and oh, by the way, you worship any way you want to, and you worship anybody you want to, and you're welcome. Come on in.
Well, what's happened in Northern Europe with the old Protestant state churches is very parallel to what's happened to the mainline historic denominations in the United States, all of which have been in steady decline for over 50 years for the same reasons. They've all become very theologically liberal in partnership with increased politics of the left. And more estranged from their historic teachings and more estranged from their own church members. And so they're caught in a sort of a reinforcing cycle of decline. And as they liberalize their standards, they do so under the claim that will open the doors to a wider potential constituency. But this almost never turns out to be the case. And the more permissive they become theologically and socially, the more and more people they lose and the fewer people they're able to retain.
Yeah. You know, it's so sad. And by the way, if you were to, you know, find out through a survey or something, how many of these people, like the leaders, like this lesbian bishop, how many of them actually claim to believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died for sinners, and, you know, on our behalf in the atonement, and then he rose again from the dead? Those are, you know, some basic Christian doctrines. You know, how many of them actually believe this stuff? I mean, the core of Christian faith element to the principles.
Well, of course, the crux of these problems dates back really to the early 20th century when the seminaries of all the mainline churches in the U.S., and I'm almost certain that would be true in Europe as well, became theologically liberal and, as you say, denied Orthodox teachings about the full deity of Christ and his virgin birth and his physical resurrection and the authority of the Bible and the need for personal salvation, and turn the gospel into mostly a message of social transformation and societal uplift. That old social gospel and that old modernistic theological liberalism has mostly died off, and the new liberalism is actually surprisingly more orthodox in that it's postmodern and doesn't deify science and accepts that the existence of a possibility of miracles. And many young liberal Protestants I meet today can affirm or say they can affirm the Apostles' Creed in its original meaning, but they, being postmodern, they're and often not believing in objective truth, they will say, well, that's our story, but it's not necessarily the story for all people. And they obviously would tend to be very liberal on sexuality issues and gender issues, and they're very liberal and or would deny the uniqueness of the Christian message, or they would try to minimize that in favor of a more universal understanding of salvation.
Yeah. Well, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Now, these are not very comfortable words for such a person as you just described. How do they deal with something like that?
Oh, I think they try to relativize it and say, well, that's our story. He's speaking to our community, to the church, but it's not necessarily binding on all people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Huh. Well, at the end of the day, what is going to happen with these churches? It's almost as if, especially, you know, we're starting out with this context in Sweden, okay? I'll bet you there's probably more people, human beings, that worship on Friday in the mosque than there would be human beings worshiping their deity on Sunday mornings in the churches in Sweden.
If that's not already true, it certainly is heading in that direction. Although it should be pointed out that as these old liberal state or one state to Protestant churches die, there are growing other Christian communities, and that, in fact, many immigrants are not Muslim, especially from Africa. They tend to be more Christian. Sometimes they're, on paper, they're regarded as Muslim because they come from majority Muslim countries, but very often they're Christian minorities from those countries. And there are growing churches throughout Europe, often led by immigrant communities, but not exclusively, and in some cases and in some countries, increasingly in reaction to the influx of Muslim immigration, a lot of native Europeans are rediscovering their own Christian faith, and once dormant churches are, re-exploring what they're all about. And we just had a German scholar speak here at our office 2 weeks ago explaining this phenomenon in Germany, how many of the dormant Protestant churches in Germany are now being confronted by once nominal Muslims who are converting to Christianity and want to join the church. And these churches have never even baptized an adult before. And so these are whole new situations. And in many ways, these Muslim converts to Christianity are revitalizing the church in Germany in some cases.
Wow. So the Lord is on the move. You know, the thing on the sad side of thing, or I'll just say it for what it's worth, I think, and you and I have discussed this before, I think the Anglican liturgy is actually beautiful. The words, and you might even have somebody that doesn't even believe these things, but they're saying them, that, you know, in the fullness of time, God sent his one and only son, Jesus Christ, who died for our sins, who da-da-da, you know, so they're saying all the right stuff, and you know what? That stuff, that liturgy is absolutely beautiful, and it touches the soul, and the Nicene Creed, which is still used, I just wish they believed it personally.
Well, and we can always hope and pray. You know, sometimes it happens. Those who don't necessarily believe, just through attendance at worship and hearing and reciting and going through the majestic liturgies, often the seed of faith is planted, even if the message from the pulpit is not very strong. Nonetheless, the gospel is there in the liturgy and in the hymns.
All right, last question, unless there's anything you want to add to this. What exactly is the Institute on Religion and Democracy, and what is your goal in that organization?
Well, our goal is to advocate for a responsible political and social witness by the churches and by Christianity in America, that when church leaders and Christian activists speak out politically, that they do so in sync with traditional historic Christian teachings and are accountable to the memberships of their churches and do so in a way that is faithful and winsome and effective and in sync with the teachings of the universal church, not just reflecting their own ideological preferences from an American standpoint.
And although obviously Europe is a lot more liberal than America, there does seem to be a tendency that some of the things that happen in Europe eventually will come here to America too.
Yes, and vice versa. I think that the churches in Northern Europe are much, and throughout Europe, are much in a much more decayed state than Christianity in America, which is much more vital, never having been supported by the state, and therefore being always more entrepreneurial and independent and more responsive to the market, if you will. But we have our own challenges, obviously, but overall, I think as Christians, we always are called to be hopeful.
Yeah, excellent. And by the way, since in light of what you just said about the American experience and, you know, the idea of, you know, this is not sponsored by the state, there's a wonderful document written by founding father James Madison called Memorial and Remonstrance. And I believe the year is 1785. And the gist of it is that Christianity does best when it is not sponsored by the state, but allowed to just, you know, flourish on its own. And boy, was he right. He was so right. All right, Mark, thank you so much for your time. Any closing thought?
Well, again, I would just encourage your listeners to recall that as Christians, what among the greatest virtues is the virtue of hope, and despair is a sin.
Yeah,
so we are to bear
point.
Witness to the hope within us to a world very much in need of it.
All right. Mark Tooley, theIRD.org. Thanks, Mark. God bless.
Thank you, Jerry. God bless you, too. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.